Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Decent Christian Talk podcast. Enjoy.
Decent Christian Talk, episode number 45.
45, the same age as you.
Not quite.
More Brendan's alley.
I'm Gabe Jones. This is...
Josiah.
My brother.
Yeah,
my
better...
Baby brother. Not quite my baby brother.
No, the baby one's... I don't know where he is, but...
Anyway, we've got a great episode for you today. We have a conversation with a band that just came back. They weren't dead, but they came back from a hiatus. They are To Speak of Wolves. They just released a record on Solid State that you need to go check out. It's a really good album. We got to see them live at Creation Fest. What did you think of them?
They really blew me away. I was surprised. You know, sometimes if you haven't been around for a while, sometimes there's some ring rust getting back to it. But no, they were all over it.
Yeah, and the conversation is going to touch a lot about the new album. It's going to touch a lot about some mental health. This podcast is going to kind of touch upon that. So we had a conversation with them. We also, right after that, we have a conversation with someone that we know. Her name's Emily DeWitt. She has a master's degree in counseling, and we talk a little bit more about mental health. This is all on the aftermath of Chester Bennington passing away, Linkin Park lead vocalist that a lot of us grew up listening to. Some of his lyrics have touched a lot of people over the years, and this isn't just an isolated thing. That there's been a lot of people that have passed away over the years, unfortunately. Because of some mental health issues. But this is kind of probably more than any other one has put it more in the limelight than anybody else. Robin Williams a couple years ago did as well. But this is kind of a podcast where we talk about it, and it's not always an easy topic to talk about, but it's one that needs to be brought to the light, and, you know, it's important to discuss.
This is probably one of the more uncomfortable podcasts that we've ever done, because it's not something that is easy to talk about. I know personally, myself, not to go into too much detail, but yeah, there's been some mental health issues, and to be quite honest, the whole Linkin Park thing kind of hit me weird, because growing up, when you connect with someone, especially through music, and you're listening to those lyrics, and you're like, oh, I hear those lyrics, and then he's 41 years old, and he takes his own life, and you're like, man, like, if I connected with him at, I'm 27 now, that's 14 years from now, am I still gonna connect with him? I don't know, like, if that makes sense, but it's weird to connect to someone, and then to see the end result. And it's not good.
Well, we all have family and friends that are affected by this. You talk about him being 41, but there's a lot of people in our lives that are our age and decide to take their own life, and even younger than us. It's something that if you don't really walk in their shoes, you don't really know exactly what they're struggling with, and that's why we felt it's important to talk about this, because we kind of want to give you basically open your eyes to some of the problems that people might struggle with, and just kind of bring that to the light, and hey, if you ever feel like you need to talk with someone, this is kind of also an encouragement for you to reach out. And there's a suicide prevention hotline. You can always tweet us, DC Talk Act 2. We can always put you in touch with somebody. Talk to friends, talk to family, talk to people that care about you and have your best interest at heart. And this is definitely what this show is dedicated to, and we hope you are challenged by it.
Yeah, we're here by the fans and for the fans. So, I don't know. It's like I said, it's a weird topic because a lot of the things that To Speak of Wolves deals with, I'm going to be completely honest, I've listened to the album maybe once or twice. It's very good musically. It's very good lyrically. But it's one of those things for me, it's almost like when you watch The Passion of the Christ, you're like, wow, that was really good, but that's not something I can listen
it's
to.
It's a dark
day.
Album. It's, yeah, it is.
And there's songs about grandparents dying, there's songs about divorce, there's like, and the place that that takes you, and they're very good about how they do it. Yeah. And then, I don't know, there's, people look at it and they're like, well, like, I can understand someone in that situation. Someone's always worse off. But when you're inside your own mind, and I mean, Linkin Park even talked about that in the song Heavy. When you're inside your own mind, it doesn't matter. I mean, he's a millionaire rock star, like, traveling the world. And people would say, you know what, your life's pretty good. But part of mental health is not where your life is, it's where your mind is. And you could have everything, but still just feel so lonely, feel like there's no hope, feel like, I mean, I told someone this the other day, people that commit suicide, they're not like, I want to die. That's not the reason they do that. They just can't find a good enough a reason to live. So it's, I mean, you can say get help or I don't know, but it's not an easy thing to deal with. It's not an easy thing to talk about. But, I mean, get help is an easy thing to say. But you need to find a way to love yourself. And find someone that can help you love yourself. And Jesus is really the only answer. That's what helped me. I mean, people helped me as much as they could. But at the end of the day, I still had to love myself before I could resolve things. And it's hard, like, still to this day. And I wake up on the wrong side of the bed every once in a while, and it can be hard, so.
And part of loving yourself is knowing yourself, and that's kind of a self-discovery thing, and we talk about that in this episode. There's a lot of Socratic philosophy about that, and you know, we're at Josiah's house right now. On the way here, I drove through an absolute monsoon, and it was hard to see very much in front of me. But that does not change the fact that there's a sun out there. And even though I couldn't see it, it was still there, and it still existed. And that's true with so many people that are going through these periods in their life. Some are longer than others, where it's true, there is light out there, but they don't see it. They're so far in their cave, for lack of a better word, in their cave, that they don't see the light. But this podcast is, hopefully will show you that there is light, and we just pray and hope that you'll reach for it.
Was my problem, is I know there's light, but I had to, like I said, I had to love myself, because why reach out for the light if you don't have a reason to? So there is light. Some people can't see it. Some people know it's there, and just kind of to spite themselves, they don't reach for it. So that's, I mean, it's dark. So yeah, there's no way to fix it unless you're willing to. So maybe this podcast will help. Like Gabe said, you can reach out to us. I'll talk with you. Someone reach out to a friend. If you don't feel like you have any friends, reach out to us. Like,
sure. We love you guys. We thank you so much for listening. Hey, if you know anybody that's going through a hard time, I would encourage you to share this episode with them. Just let them listen to it, even if they're not metal fans. I think this conversation will be helpful. And just, there's a lot of practical things in this episode that'll help them hopefully find some hope. But we're going to get to our interviews right now. Once again, we have a interview with Emily DeWitt. She has a master's in counseling, but before we get to that, we're going to talk with To Speak of Wolves. So let's get it.
Yeah.
All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
So you guys went on hiatus for a while, and now you're back. What's the reason? Why did you come back? Is there one reason, or is there a bunch of reasons?
I think we all just want to do a record again. We are all, you know, some of us got married, some of us went and did this, some of us went and did that, you know. And I think we're just like, man, kind of ready to do another record, you know, we should see what happens. So we put a little thing up on, did you already talk about that?
Okay. I haven't said anything.
Oh, okay. I've been waiting for you for now.
Oh, okay, cool, sorry. I am
the bass player, I know how it goes.
We threw this thing up on Facebook, and we're like, hey, would you guys want another record, or something like along the lines of that.
Right.
And like went viral. Like within like an hour, had all these likes, all these shares, these people post them on it. Like, man, maybe we should do something, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it's just the main reasons that we wanted to. We just wanted to make music with each other again, you know, because it had ended so abruptly. But yeah.
How important, you know, you talked about the fans just causing that to go viral. How important was it for you to see that? But also to have a label like Solid State behind you to support that.
Yeah, I think it was everything. It meant the world to us, you know, because we put out the EP on Cardigan Records, our buddy out in North Carolina in Soft's little record label. Mm. The EP had just a little one and done deal. And then we put that out. We shot it over to Solid State. We're like, hey, Dave, we're back doing the scan list. How do you think about this, you know? And Adam's just like, dude, this is awesome. Let's do your next label or your next record, you know.
Well, a lot of people don't know, but in between when we just got off the road and when we came back last year and did the tours with O Sleeper, we got together one other time and played some shows. And it didn't feel the way it always did. It really wasn't what we wanted it to be, and so I'll never forget. I work at a restaurant in Nashville, and I was running up and down the stairs and just happened to see that text, like, hey, would you guys want to do another record? And when it started, it was just guys who wanted to make music together again, not having any hopes of it being anything else. I was playing in another band. You know, everybody was doing the various things that they were doing, and that response really sort of relit the flame of when we were out together. I mean, before we came off the road, we did 3 tours in a row with no AC, just fighting with everything we had. And, you know, our transmission started to go out in Lubbock. We contemplated doing the tour with no trailer, everything crammed into the back of a 15-passenger, like just to get it done because we had to get to the festivals that we were getting there. And everybody was deflated. You know, I know that we all felt defeated in the way that we could. And it just left a bad taste in our mouth, and to want to do it again was great. To have the fans respond the way that they did, it was right as Facebook Live became a thing, and it was just text. It was text album 3, and then I think they put a picture of like a Marshall head up, and it got 180,000 interactions, and we couldn't believe it. And my wife works in doing social media stuff, and she lost her mind, and so it's just really been this like. We started to look back and find out that, like, the record sold, like, 8,000 copies while we were broken up. We've played cities since we've come back. Kids who know every word to every song, we've never seen them before. Cities we've never played. Mm. And it made us all feel like we weren't done with it. And I know that's the way I always felt. This was my favorite band that I got to play in. And musically and just the dudes, it's so easy. We had to give it another shot.
You guys talked about a lot of things have changed. Some of you got married. What is the kind of the changes in your life? How has that affected how you guys write music now? Or has it?
I don't know if it's affected how we write music. I think it's made some other things different because we're all... There's no just, like, jump in the van and go. You know what I mean? Like, so like I said, someone's married to that, so it's like, you know, you can't go play... shows and that don't make sense anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to be like, dude, show in Utah for like $200, but it's with so and so. Heck yeah, let's go. Now it's just like, ugh, no, we're not doing that. You know what I mean? So I think things are just more, I think we just make, all our moves are more smarter. It's a chess game. Music is a chess game. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So it's about making the right moves. And I think that's how we're, I'd say that's how we look at it now, really.
If I had to say a word that really would just kind of spread across the board, it's just there's maturity that wasn't there.
Yeah.
And I think we've always been pretty hands-on and DIY, but there's an urgency that wasn't there before. You know, when I leave home, you know, I promise my wife, and she wouldn't let me leave if she didn't believe it, but every second that we're away, we have to make it count as much as we can. And so it's meeting fans, it's signing people up to pre-order our record, selling the EP, just literally knowing we left whatever show we played, doing everything we possibly could to further our band as much as possible. I think that, you know, and chime in, I think that it's stretched us to where we've met people and made connections that if we didn't have that urgency, wouldn't have happened. We would have, you know, you have the things you're set in, you go to a show, you set up merch, you sound check, you hang out, and then you play. Now we're trying to find angles, we're meeting press, we're you know, talking to people in different cities, trying to coordinate things that we just never thought of before, and, you know, trying to keep track of the vein of what's happening. I think from an entrepreneurial standpoint, I think it's the most exciting thing I've been able to be a part of, just because we're developing it as we go and making it ours simultaneously. It's been really fun brain space for me in that way.
Yeah, I wouldn't really say songwriting's changed very much, but I think just how we run them, do the day-to-day of the band is definitely different, you know?
I've watched a lot of talented bands that get bogged down by the business side of things. Like you guys said, like, it can burn you out, because you're just like, oh, let's go play music, it'll be fun, but then...
Well, there's that classic thing that people say, you know, artists have such a hard time with what people would call the more practical life, I think that throughout time, it parallels. Like, they had patrons. They had, like, you have to find investors. You have to find a way to get what you're doing to fans. And I think as far as bands go nowadays, they're in more control than they ever have been. You know, record labels are kind of dying. Radio stations are dying. Like, the old ways that music has happened and gotten to people is changing dramatically. And you know, you figure out a way to surf that wave, or you know, you get sort of bowled over by it. And having your, at least for me, the feeling of having my destiny in my hands more than I ever have is really exciting. Mm. It also puts me under more pressure, which that's where I like to be. And it's just part of what you got to get good at. You have to be good at your instrument, you have to be good at people, and you have to be good at business, or if they won't pick you. You know, it has to be someone. And if you don't do everything you can do to make it you, then, you know, you don't even get a shot at going in the door.
You guys had an EP last fall, and it's kind of like getting ready for the album coming out next month. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
July. Can you tell us about this album? It's your first album, full-length album back. What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, it's called Dead in the Shadow. It comes out July 21st. Yeah, it's a more... I don't know, I hate to say mature. I feel like every band's like, this is more mature.
Well, but I don't think that's what it is.
I think it's darker. I think it's darker and it's more polished. Mm-hmm. That's, to me, I'd say, but it still has that tenacity that people know us by. You know what I mean? The chaotic, big choruses kind of thing, you know?
Wouldn't you say it's angrier, too?
It is angrier. It's a lot angrier, that's for sure. Yeah.
Did you pull some of your wrestling background into writing the...
Well, lyrically, Gage is the one who moves the tectonic plates of that. Mm. But we're all just in a frame of mind writing the music. Andrew handled, you know, putting the guitars together, and he's a brilliant addition.
That dude is a riff machine.
And this record would not have become what it is in any sort of way without him.
Mm-hmm.
It just came to... There are a lot of things, much like, you know, we were unhappy with the way that it ended. We just had stuff to say. We've watched things happen. We, you know, being married, you end up going to counseling. You end up starting to talk about your feelings. And as you share space with another person that you've never let anybody else in, you know, sometimes you don't know it's there. Other times you've really hidden it from people. At least for the two of us, it was like there's things we can offer people from this commentary that we feel like is valuable. And that's the space that it's definitely the most naked, I think, of any lyrics that have ever been on a To Speak of Wolves record.
Yeah, I definitely pushed myself to places I really didn't want to go to before.
Vulnerable.
Yeah, really, really vulnerable. It's really
weird singing some vulnerable stuff out on stage as well. Like,
yeah, kind of. I mean, when you're on stage, it's just kind of like television, but definitely in a record, we're like. So how I wrote the lyrics to this record was I'd lock myself in this room where we're standing in the studio. Had like a soft lamp, and I'd read Psalms 88 every day. Mm. It's like one of two Psalms in the Bible that ends in like complete hopelessness. Just like sucks so bad. Mm. And like the last line of it is, darkness is my only friend. So I'd read that, and I'd look at the picture of the fallen man every day. This dude jumping out of the Twin Towers. It's just like, just like it's the most unreal picture I've ever seen before. And then I would read people's suicide notes every day, and then read like some old journal stuff. That's how I like started my morning, and then I would just start writing and writing and writing and writing. And then I finished the song. It was all the music would be done. I'd finish the song. If I was reading back the lyrics and they didn't make me cry, I would tear it out, throw it away, and completely start over on that song. And so. Yeah, and then at the end of the day, I'd read, like, Love Does, and Bob Goff, like, pull me out of that hellhole, you know? Yeah. It's like, oh my God, I'm dying. but, I mean, I just wanted to go there. Like, that's where I wanted to go. So, yeah, I think, like, what Seth was saying, it's just, like, it's very, I think lyric content is kind of unsettling, you know what I mean? Like, but it doesn't make it hard to talk about on stage. I kind of look forward to talking about it on stage, because that's what, it's real life stuff, you know? Like, it's just all... It's all legit. It's all real. And that's what, you know, Seth was saying, you know, counseling. I've been going to camp and seen a counselor for the last couple months. Like, counselor therapist dudes to, like, change my life. Hmm. And I'd, like, gone to ministry school and stuff. And I was like, oh, man, like, I'm healed. Like, God healed me. I'm good. Like, this is great. But never, like, really took time to, like, talk to a professional about it. Hmm. To be like, that's good. Like, yeah, you're healed. But you still have all this stuff right here. Like, just because you went to ministry school and God is your healer doesn't mean that you don't have life's hurts all of it right here, you know? So that was a very big thing for me to walk through. And be like, oh man, this is hard, you know?
It's good that you go places like that because there's people in your audience that are there too and they're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah,
you know, you think of any artist of any time period, and it was like the thing that they offered the masses was this thing that would move them. You know, it's like Mozart and Bach. I mean, they definitely didn't have words that they spoke, but the music, when you listen to it, it does what it does. Beethoven and all those things on into where we're at now. So much music has been played that we think... you know, broad stroke, pulling all the way back and, you know, bird's eye view, what do we really have to offer that no one else does? Well, it's our lives. And so church people especially, there's this thing of where no one mourns together. Mm. They don't want to do that. It's not, I'm guilty because I know it's so difficult emotionally to just genuinely sit in a place of unsettled, no resolution. And no one wants to do that with other people because they're like, oh, you know, God is good all the time. And that's true. But there's all of this sediment that is some really great, brilliant things that you can share with people if you don't ever go there. Mm-hmm. And to me, and Gage wrote the lyrics, like I added a line or two here and there. But Gage's thing, me looking at it as an interested person is there's this bond that can happen because who he is I care so deeply about that I live part of that with him. And if we've already experienced things that there's kids that they don't have a grasp of the situation's gravity, they don't have a thought process to help them filter through what's said, what's done, that's a place that I would love to, you know, hold someone's hand and walk them through, because I remember what it was like to not have that. Not that anybody neglected me or anything like that, but I wasn't allowed to be sad. My dad was a soldier. My stepmom was a soldier. My mom is an emotional person.
Awesome.
She is awesome. but she's just this force that made me imagine as a kid, I don't have time for this. Because it's all strength all the time. I have to go. I have to fight. I have to war on the things that are, you know, coming against us. And you have to, you know, Al, the same, you know, we go to the same counselor. He told me, he's like,
truly,
you know, the Bible says that the Bible says that, you know, blessed are those who mourn because mm-hmm. they'll be comforted. You know, when you realize that in your upbringing, however it was, you've never allowed yourself to just deal with the sorrow that you have, there's a dimension to who you are that is missing your entire life until you let that well open up and you deal with it.
Yeah, because that's one of the reasons why Jesus was on the cross, so we could feel that. You know what I mean? Like, he felt all that so we could feel that. Mm-hmm. You know? Do you think she's saying that, bro?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, then, you know, and then the psychology of it, you know, when you learn, when you start to learn, which anybody listening to this, if you don't know what Enneagram is, look it up. It is the most incredible tool for having relationships with people.
I don't either. He's always telling me to get on it.
Enneagram?
It's, well, okay, that's a completely
It's like an upside down star that has these, like, 5 points. No, I'm just joking.
No, but...
But it's not the Illuminati.
As you start to see the way that people think, and then Al and I talked about it. It's something that I read when I went to school. But it's just no human, zero, greatest upbringing, worst upbringing. No human doesn't have pathology in place from when they're a child, and they build these filters that create their perspective for their entire life. And until you're an adult and you go back. And you make those more sophisticated, everybody has trauma because of that. Things happen you don't understand, and you get jealous of how your mom loves your dad more than you. I mean, that's just something that I know happened to me. I remember being really upset about that as a kid. And so, you know, any number of those moments that are just the natural coming of age, all those things, like, that's something you have to go back and deal with. And it's healthy. Yeah. As opposed to people being like, oh, you're going to a psychologist, like, that means something's wrong with you. It's like, no, we all need to get in there and put wires where they belong.
I'm a former psych major, so I understand, like, it's really cool to hear you guys talk about that, because a lot of people, like you said, they just, like, straightforward, like, I can't cry over this, or this can't make me sad, or I can't get angry, this push through. But, like, you have to deal with that. That's part of, I mean, you can't let it stop you from going through, sure. but... Mm-hmm. Like, you have to deal with that to get through it.
Yeah.
When you're abused, especially, you have boundaries that are... man, I'm trying to think of a polite way to say this, but there's really not. I mean, you just... It retards growth everywhere, anywhere. And you have
you
things...
You could have said held back growth, Seth. You
well,
didn't have to say
I,
that.
You're right. But there's things like that that make it so that you cannot experience the things that you want to be able to. You know, like, to be completely honest, like, it's still really difficult for me to be vulnerable with my wife because, and I had to tell her honestly, at the place that I'm at now, if I told you something and you used it against me, there would be no way for you to come back from that because of the magnitude of hurt that happened when I was a kid. And so... That's, in a nutshell, I know I'm super long-winded, but in a nutshell, that's kind of the place that the record is coming from, is like, I was abused as a child, physically and emotionally, and then my dad died when I was 25. So you add to that, there's this element of, like, I don't get resolution. I thank God that the last conversation I had with my dad was him telling me he was proud of me when I was, you know, when I started playing music and being serious about it, he told me I was an idiot and that I'd fail and all of those things, you know, on top of the rest of our story to that point. And, you know, my dad didn't meet my wife. He won't meet my kids. Mm. You know, all of those things. And it's like there's just these moments of where you don't know how that's going to hit you until it does. And you have to build your way of getting through it, because it really is debilitating. And people will belittle you for it. But, I mean, it's like you have the structure of your humanity and a pillar is missing. No one can stand in that. I mean, mm. they can for a time, but... you know, you're waiting for everything to topple over, and then you have to, you know, rebuild it anyway. And to me, that's the record in so many ways, literally as that, and then metaphorically as a band. Like, this was our renaissance. Mm-hmm. I've never been more excited to play songs live. I mean, I'm a pretty, like, enthusiastic dude, but I cannot wait.
Couldn't tell.
Yeah, I could not wait. Cannot wait to play them.
All right, speaking of playing them live, before we get out of here, you guys got a tour this fall. Who is it with? And I guess, are you excited to play these songs or not? Obviously,
yeah.
We are, but...
Yeah, we're stoked.
Who are you playing with?
We're going to be on tour with, in a week and a half. We go with He Is Legend,
okay.
Islander, and Bad Seed Rising. Mm-hmm. So... yeah, we're super stoked on that. We all love the He Is Legend dudes, and the other two bands seem super cool, and yeah, get to put the new record out, so I think we're going to play three new songs, three old songs in that tour. Yeah, we're tired of playing old songs. We want to play new stuff.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for your time.
Before we let you go, so you can pre-order the record at iTunes.
Okay.
Yeah. But... if you want some of the deluxe pre-order packages, go to solidstate.merchnow.com, and then you can choose from the plethora that is there. We have a deal. You can get a shirt and a CD for $20.
Nice.
You get a download link to Haunt Me the moment you make the purchase.
Moment.
And He Is Legend's new record, Few Rules, so if you don't have that, buy that too. Buy ours first.
Yeah, buy ours first.
And then wait until you get paid next week.
Screw those
and buy
guys.
Their
yeah.
record.
He Is Legend's been around forever. They can wait. They can wait.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, dudes.
All right, so I am here. What's your name?
Emily DeWitt.
Okay, and we've known each other for a very long time. So even though we may sound awkward talking to each other, that's just... how we are together.
That's what happens when you put two introverts together.
Right. Right. Okay, so tell us, for those of you, so there's obviously a lot of people that might not know you. Tell them about your background and how you grew up, and just kind of like, yeah, start out there.
Okay. Yeah, so the reason that Gabe and I know each other, and this is part of my background, is that we went to church together for a really long time.
Yes.
Yeah. Speaking of this being DC Talk podcast,
yeah.
Gabe used to lip sync some DC Talk back in the day in Children's Church.
Right.
Sorry, I had to throw that in there.
Yeah. It's okay. All the cool kids were doing
it. Yeah. You can edit it out later.
No, it's okay. I'm not ashamed, though.
Good. You shouldn't be. Yeah, so went to the same church for a long time. So grew up in a Pentecostal church, very large church.
Yeehaw.
I grew up in a family. My mom was a Christian, but my dad was not. So that was an interesting dynamic. Mm-hmm. Was, again, much less introverted now, but was super introverted as a child and kind of kept to myself and was awkward and, yeah. Typical child stuff. But.
How was your experience like going through like growing up in high school and college, and what was your experience with kind of the church? And because I know a lot of people go through like a crossroads stage mm-hmm. at that time. How was that for you?
Yeah, well, I'd say really middle school was probably one of the hardest times for me. I mean, middle school sucks for everybody in general because you're going through puberty and stuff. But that's kind of when I was really, like, first kind of, I didn't want to go to church and, like, would kind of avoid, like, I didn't go to youth group and I thought it was lame and would just kind of sit in my room by myself and go on the computer and stuff. So I went through a little stint of that, and then got into high school and got a little bit more out there and started going back to youth and stuff again, playing on the worship team. But I was like, kind of went like from one extreme to the other, because then I was like super prideful and was just like, well, I'm a Christian and I'm doing the right thing, so like all these sinners are just ruining their lives, you know, super prideful. And then I got to college, and then you kind of realize like, wow, everything I know is wrong. And reformed a little bit and became nice Emily, and very empathetic Emily at that point too, and decided that I really like talking to people and working with people and helping people. So I got a degree in social work, and then I got a degree in counseling, and here I am.
Why did you choose that field?
I chose that because, specifically because of like my experiences growing up through middle school and high school, like feeling like I was such an awkward and like really an internally kind of disturbed child sometimes. I mean, on the outside maybe it didn't always show, but like had some pretty dark thoughts sometimes, and didn't share it with anybody. I just like kept to myself, or like maybe shared it with like my cousin, who was also like going through a lot of stuff, so we were just depressed together really, rather than like knowing how to change it. And I just looked back and I was like, I mean, I know there were counselors at my schools, but nobody really told me that I could utilize them as like more than just getting my classes changed. And so I kind of realized like I want to, and like working with youth at church and stuff too, I kind of just saw like I liked working with adolescents, and I was okay at it. I was pretty good at making connections with them, and I just remembered me and being like, I wish that I'd had somebody to like talk to me through all that stuff. So yeah.
How did you get from being someone that was holding all of that in to someone that wanted to work in that field and was interested in that field of mental health?
I think mainly just like finding, I mean, part of it was just finding myself, which like I was really like blessed that like God protected me through a lot of that stuff, because I mean, I know a lot of people that get through that stage and they either don't make it through that stage at all, or it kind of affects them for the rest of their life, which I'm sure I had things still, like, and I do still have things underneath that I'm working on, but I think I was blessed to, like, have been protected a lot emotionally through a lot of the stuff that I was dealing with, and then also, like, eventually finding, especially in college, like, finding really great, loving people that cared for me and had a lot of grace for me where I didn't have that before, so.
How hard was it for you to initially open up and get to the point where you felt comfortable kind of addressing those issues that, I mean, a lot of times they're really deep, and just finding even the trust to do that?
I mean, with friends, like, I definitely, it took a little bit, because I have a personality type that, like, I really like to people please, and I don't like people to be disappointed in me, and I kind of had, like, a handful of, like, friends and other, you know, people that I was close to growing up through school that, like, really looking back did not care so much about how I was doing and, like, really weren't there for me on a deep level. So I didn't really, like, share a lot of that stuff with them. But then you kind of, too, like, I think you just know when you meet somebody that really does care, like, there's just a different, like, I mean, atmosphere and spirit about them, like, so, you know, once you get to know that person, it was definitely a lot easier, like, once I started finding the friends that I have now, like, people that I'm still close to now, you know, it's like word vomit. You start with a little bit, and then it just all comes out at some point. So, but then ask for, like, I mean, do you want just, like, friend-wise, or do you want, like in the, as a mental health professional?
Sure, team? Either one.
Yeah, that one took a little bit longer, because I think, too, yeah, we're kind of batting this back and forth earlier, but, like, in the church, you're kind of, sometimes it's a little bit, I mean, it's great, because you do find, like, really wonderful, healthy people that love you and care for you, like we were talking about, and that's really great. But then sometimes you also have the people that, like, brush things off as, like, well, like, pray about it. Have you prayed about it? God's more powerful than the struggle you're in, you know,
yeah.
Which is all true, but, I mean, God definitely has, like, a time for miraculous healings, and he also has a use for the callings he puts on people's lives, and some of those people are mental health professionals, and
right.
And sometimes you just gotta reach out for that, so that definitely took me a little bit longer to admit that I needed more than just a friend to talk to.
Did you ever feel like there was, like, a negative light, a negative light shone on people that might be going through those issues to where they may be seen as, like, weak, and that was kind of part of the reason why it was so hard to open up?
Yes, yeah, because you definitely, like, and I had experiences with, like, relatives and stuff like this where, it's kind of like you'd mention counseling or seeing a therapist, and they were like, no, we don't need that. We're not that bad. Like, there's people way worse than us. And it is very, like, they relate it to other people's experiences rather than, like, relate it to your own norm. I mean, you know, because maybe I wasn't, like, suicidal necessarily, or maybe I wasn't bipolar or something, like those kind of big trigger words that people think about when you think about getting therapy. But, like, I mean, to one person's, like, normal day could be somebody else's, like, traumatic event. I mean, it just...
Mm.
Just depends on your own norm.
Did you ever feel like that? Just kind of expanding on that last question. Did you ever feel like you were just kind of less of a person for asking for help?
I think, especially with like when it came to getting like an actual mental health professional in the community, like getting help from them, which was. Really not that long ago when I started doing that, I think it was hard for me to admit that I still had stuff to work on, because I'd already graduated, I'd gone through the counseling program, and had some, like, help during that time, but not, like, anything super deep, and I think in my mind I was like, well, I'm so old that, like, I should be an adult and be able to take care of this, and I've gone through this program, so I should really be able to help myself, right? But, like, sometimes it's just... Like, you know the things that are true, but you have to have somebody to work them out and, like, talk them out with, because if you just stay in your mind the whole time, my mind's a pretty chaotic place, so not much gets done if it's all inside.
So, like, for me, there were some things that happened in my life at a younger age that, like, something... like, recently would trigger, like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize that was there.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like for you to like, finally, once you talked to somebody, was like, and you realized how long maybe something had been rooted inside of you, and how important was that to take care of that at the very root of the problem?
That's a really good, like, question and point, because, like, that's probably one of the biggest issues, too, is that we kind of invalidate our own problems, kind of the same as I was talking before. Maybe other people invalidate them, but sometimes we invalidate them ourselves, and we go, well, you know, yeah, this thing happened when I was growing up, but, like, other people have it way worse, so, like, why would I shouldn't have any issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then something triggers you, and you're like, why is this such an issue? Mm-hmm. And so really, like, that's one of the biggest parts of counseling, is, like, validating your client or your student or whoever you're working with. And so then on the opposite side, being the client, like, it's such a good feeling to have somebody be like, you're not crazy, like, it's okay that you're upset about this, it's okay that you're angry about this, or bitter, or whatever, like, that's okay, or afraid, even, like, you can't base it off of somebody else, just because somebody else experienced something different doesn't mean you experience it the same way. So,
what made you finally get over the hump and finally decide, I've got to talk to somebody, professionally?
it was kind of like, I think it was building, and then kind of one of those, like, straw that broke the camel's back. So, like, you know, I was already stressed about, like, you know, got a new job and had all this new stuff happening, and was just, like, having a hard time adjusting, and then, like a bad relationship kind of blew up in my face in a way. And that was kind of the point where I was like, I can't be, like, driving home, like, having mental breakdowns every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, obviously, there's going to be people that are listening to this that might be interested, but they don't really know what their options are. What are some options for people that might not want to take the professional jump yet, but they're interested anyway?
Yeah, so, well, I'll put this out there too, like if you, I don't know what all the age ranges are that are listening, but like if you're a student, whether you're in like elementary, but middle school, high school, and even college, like that was something I don't think I realized existed in college even until I was like in the grad program, but they have people and even students learning to be counselors or therapists, like employed in like student health, like areas of your college that you can, which as a student, I think you can get for free. So definitely in public schools free because you're in school. You have people that are there, even if you don't see them, like look for them, ask for them, like, cause that's a really great free resource. And then as adults, that does get trickier because then money and stuff with like professional ones comes about. But I mean, if you are at a church or near a church, like, I mean, you can get a certain level of counseling from, like, pastors or pastoral staff, or even sometimes they have employed counselors at churches. I don't know how, I guess that probably differs on payment, depending on what church or who it is. And then even, like, yeah, we were talking about earlier, like, I believe that people have different, like, spiritual giftings. I don't know if you're Christians out there listening and you believe in those giftings, but I think that they range bigger than sometimes we even like think, or maybe that are specifically mentioned in the New Testament. But like, there are definitely people out there with spiritual gifts for like counseling or discernment or things of that sort that like, and I think you can kind of just feel when you meet that person, like somebody that's going to be a good listener and that is safe. Like you don't want to talk to people that are going to tell everybody else your stuff. So, so yeah, definitely. There's going to find a healthy church with some healthy individuals and talk to God about it too. All in all, talk to God.
Very important.
That's probably the most important direction you can get is from God.
Practically, what are some ways that people, because I mean, even for me, I didn't even know, as someone actually as lucky enough to have health insurance, I didn't know what my options are. What are some practical ways that people can find options that they can explore, even professionally?
So you can, I mean, Google is a wonderful invention. I still Google when I don't know, like, what's in my area or whatever. I'll just Google, like, therapists in blank city. And usually, like, those top most popular ones will pop up. But through that, you can kind of find other ones. You can even call those places, ask about information for them, and sometimes they'll refer you to other people. Maybe you don't have an insurance or something that's covered by them, or you don't have insurance at all. Like, they can refer you to somebody that does maybe a sliding payment scale based on your income, or even free resources like community resources that you can go to. So,
okay, so this might be one of the most important questions. Recently, Chester from Lincoln Park committed suicide, and for a lot of people in this generation, you know, we had Kurt Cobain in our generation growing up, and there was between then and now, there's been a lot of people that have committed suicide that are in the limelight. But when you hear those stories, you can connect them to people that you know that are going through the same things. Mm-hmm. For people that are listening to this that are experiencing the same problems with depression and they don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, what are some things that you would tell them and challenge them to do?
Well, specifically on the topic of like suicide, one of the best things that I learned throughout like my grad studies was the phrase like suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And, like, not to, like, invalidate the problems that we're going through, because sometimes they are big problems, and sometimes it's really tough. But, like, as hard as it is to remember, like, to feel that at the moment, like, you just have to keep telling yourself, like, this is for a time, this is for a season, like, this is not forever. Just kind of remember that. And, like, yeah, again, just remember there are definitely people that love you out there. Like, I know sometimes that's hard to remember, too, but, like, just remembering making a list even of, like, who's in your life that, like, you know, if you were gone, there's going to be people that are missing you. So, like, keep those lists. Like, keep that list of things that, like, are worth living for and people worth living for and things that you haven't experienced yet or you want to do that, like, if you were to make any, like, abrupt decisions, like, you could never do or never see again, you know? It's good to just keep that reminder and, like, positive affirmations. That's something I tell my students a lot. Like, even when you feel like there's nobody in your life telling you good things about you, like, sometimes you gotta be your own cheerleader. And you gotta, even if it doesn't feel true, you write down that list of, like, good things about you, things that you're good at, that you're talented at, like, why you're worth anything, which part of that is just being a human. So people out there, remember, just being alive is, you're worth something. But yeah, making that list and, like, posting it up next to your mirror, and every day you say that to yourself. Because, like, I mean, the more and more you say something to yourself, the more true it's going to be. I mean, like, if you, like, you have a son.
Speak it into existence.
Yeah. So, like, if somebody every day told him, like, the sky is purple, eventually he's going to start being like, the sky is purple. And you're going to be like, no, that's not right. So sometimes we go through life and people have told us, like, you're crap, you're whatever, you can't do this. So we have to reverse that, like, because the more we hear it, the more it's going to be true to us, yeah.
We have bonded many, many years over Switchfoot and other bands, but Switchfoot probably more than any other. So a lot of people listening to this are obviously music fans. What has music done for you in your life, especially like Switchfoot and other bands, just listening to their words over the years, and what has that done for you to uplift you in those times?
Man, yeah, music's super important. Whether you play music or you just like to listen to music, like, I mean, for me, like, having some experience writing music, sometimes it's great because, like, maybe you feel like nobody out there feels the same way I do, whatever, like, and then you find that song that's like, this is what I'm feeling.
Did,
like,
write somebody, this about me?
So somebody does feel this way, yeah. And so, like, I like to write music because sometimes, maybe yet, as of yet, I haven't found that song that quite is describing what I'm feeling. And then I put it out there and people are like, oh my gosh, like, that's been on my heart for months or what, you know, something like that. So music's so important in that it's a way to express ourselves. And there's just that, I don't even know what the word to describe it, but you just feel different with music. Like, I can be saying this stuff, but if I was singing it to you, you'd probably be like, even more like grasped in. Yeah. So,
Before we go, do you have anything that you'd like to say to anybody that's listening?
Well, know that I love you. Even if I don't know you, know that I love you. And definitely, like, don't be afraid to reach out to somebody. Like, even sometimes it's easier to reach out to a stranger than a person you know, because you're like me and you don't like to disappoint or whatever. Definitely, maybe we can get out some links or some, like, resources of people you can reach out to. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Well, that was Emily DeWitt. I'd really like to thank Emily. We've known Emily for a very long time.
Years.
Many years. We've gone to many concerts together and
grew up in kids' church together.
Yeah, she's great. And once again, thank you to Speak of Wolves. That I know that's one of the longer interviews that we have, but those guys were gracious and really opened up their hearts and talked about a lot of things that they have on the album and kind of what they were going through within the last couple years of, I don't know, just kind of searching themselves and kind of trying to find out what's inside and... you have anything that you want to mention?
I was glad that we didn't have like a hard, most of the time when we have interviews, we have like a hard time limit, but we probably took a liberty with that time, but it was well worth it. Some of our better interviews are longer ones. So if you don't like heavy metal, I mean, look up some of their lyrics, listen to, it's not often you tear up at a metal show, but when they're singing that song about their grandpa, man, so there's some powerful things that on that album. And then
Yeah, it's a good album. Check it out. Again, it's To Speak of Wolves. It's their brand new album. It's I'm glad they're back for sure.
I am too.
We're just gonna kind of head off into the sunset.
Yeah, we're gonna wrap it up. Our friend Brendan.
This is already a long episode. Yeah. So
we're going to go to a concert. Last year's model.
Yeah, we're at Brendan. Last year's model right now. We got to get front row seats.
Oh, my goodness, I need to find my earplugs.
I couldn't afford the VIP tickets, but
no.
Anyway, for those of you that are checking out for us out for the first time, you can always check us out at decentchristiantalk.com. We post all our podcasts there. There's a if you get on there on your laptop on the right hand side of the page. There is a place where you can put your email address and you can get all of our updates right to your email account. And there's also a place where you can donate. That helps us cover some of our costs. We also have our Twitter account, DC Talk Act 2. That's DC Talk Act and the number 2. Instagram, we got DC Talk Podcast. Snapchat, DCT Podcast. We posted a lot of fun stuff from the Jesus Freak Cruise and Creation Fest in the last month or so. And we promise we're going to have more on the Jesus Freak Cruise in the future. We also have our Facebook page, Decent Christian Talk.
Which is growing.
Page. And we also have a discussion group as well, the Decent Christian Talk podcast. We also have a Patreon page, which we're still working on, patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. That's another way for you guys to kind of give back, in a way where you can give like maybe $1 a month. That would definitely help us out.
If you can't find us, it's your own fault.
And hey, we're on iTunes, we're on YouTube, we're on SoundCloud for now. I don't know what's going on with SoundCloud, but if you have iTunes, we would really appreciate if you could subscribe and give us a nice review if you can. And hey, like we said before, if you know someone that you think would really be helped out by this episode, make sure you share this with a friend, even if they're just To Speak of Wolves fans. I'm sure that they would love that. Go back into the archives and see if there's anything else that you like. And hey, give us some feedback. We definitely would appreciate that. Do you have anything else you want to say?
We made it through the whole episode without mentioning August Burns Red's new song, but that will be for a later date.
Yes.
For now, don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses.
We'll catch you next time, guys.
Thanks.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.